Hi, Mary D. This is Kate. Welcome to ADHDKidsCanThrive.com. And today I'm interviewing Mary D, who is, I found her on Instagram. She hosts Executive Functioning Success on Instagram. She is an executive functioning coach, author, and advocate, and very long time expert in the field of the importance of executive functioning and how early intervention and actions can help your child who may be struggling to get through primarily homework and they're in life. So I've spoken to Mary D before, and I wanted her today to share her personal story of how she got into this business and what she's learned from her journey, and then how she has tools that can personally help all of us if we have a child who's struggling with executive function.
Okay.
Did I cover it all, Mary D?
I think so. You've got a whole lifetime worth of time here. I will try to be concise. I'll put a clock in front of me.
Yes. Okay. So I think you have a lot to say. You're a very, very wise woman. And when we spoke before, I just learned so much just hearing about your own personal story professionally and in your own life about why you've got involved and have helped people in your own community with executive functioning. So I think if we start with that, it's just so valuable to inspire all of us on why we need to take action with our children when they're struggling and not just ignore these symptoms.
Right. Well, for starters, I will be 69 years old this summer. And
happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. It's getting closer next month, actually. And, you know, when I was growing up, I was the child that didn't turn in their math homework, that didn't turn in their senior term paper, even though I got good grades when I did turn things in. And I was a school leader. I had lots of very positive things going on, but I knew that there was just gaps. There was something wrong in my brain. There were certain things that were challenges. It was very hard for me to write, to turn in written assignments, for instance, with complex deadlines and multiple steps. I had trouble with written language, taking the ideas in my head and getting them down on paper. And I also had trouble with math, not so much that I had trouble with understanding the concepts, but I didn't do it very well in my head, that kind of stuff. Something was wrong. And so as a consequence, my self-esteem really suffered. I was the person who, as an adult, was, you know, always showing up late, always, you know, my house was welcome to my piles. I took my kids to birthday parties on the wrong day. And there was never food in the refrigerator when I needed it. I was yelling at the kids to get them out the door in the morning. It was not pretty. Even though there were aspects of my life that were successful, I always felt like the foundation was wonky, you know? It was all gonna fall apart on me at any moment in time. So my self-esteem was pretty much non-existent. I became, along the way, a classroom teacher. And I was in the classroom for only 3 years, but the first year was a long one. And then I got married, and then I ended up having kids. And while I was being at home with my kids, I developed a program to teach volunteers to teach at-risk kids how to read. And I ultimately became a reading specialist. And along with that little journey, I found my way to a woman at the University of Portland. Her name is Dr. Ellen Arwood. And Ellen Arwood is a speech pathologist by training and background. They have a very different way of looking at educational challenges than school teachers in terms of how they're taught. Yeah. And so I found myself in this classroom. I went to get ideas to teach kids how to read. But I went up to Ellen on Friday that week and I said, Ellen, I came here to get information about how I might help kids learn to read, but you've given me this tiny glimmer of insight into my own behavior connected to this time management stuff. I'll pay you anything, you know, because I was struggling so much. I'd spent 40 years of my life. I was 40 years old at the time. 40 years describing myself as an underachieving procrastinator. You know, there was a disparity between what I could do and what got produced, you know, and I didn't know what that problem was. And this was back in 1994, which I think I did the math the other day. I think it's actually being me with math and numbers, right? I think it's like 27 years ago or something horrible. I was like, 27 years ago, good grief. You know, my
time flies.
I know, on my website, I was saying, Mary's been doing this for 20 years. I was like, no, I've been doing it for 27 years. And anyway, Ellen was ahead of the curve because she was way back then making the connection through her brilliance and her observation that the way we behave was dependent upon the way our individual brains were wired. And back then, we didn't have the brain scans and the kind of brain research that we have now. And people really, quite frankly, thought she was talking woo-woo. You know, so it's like, you know, what is this stuff? You know, how can you say that? And so I remember she kind of smiled at me and said, oh, I've confused you enough this week, because I really was confused. Everybody else in the classroom were primarily speech pathologists with a very different background, and I was just floating around and lost. And she said, why don't you come, but I want you to spend an hour with me and bring a picture of what you do in the following week. She wanted me to have a drawing of what I was going to do in the next 7 days. And this isn't a visual presentation here, but if I were to show this to you, this picture, it looks like chaos. I still have this picture. It's just total chaos. And it's like little boxes and names and words, and it's just overwhelming. And Ellen looked at this, and I remember her words. She said, oh dear. She goes, oh dear, I see a very bright woman who has no sense of herself in time and space. And I was angry when I handed it to her. I was like, I don't have it, because it had taken me 2 hours to figure out what I needed to do in the next 7 days. And I, you know, I don't have that kind of time. I'm hanging on by my fingernails. Life is not easy. So we spent an hour together refining what she meant by drawing a picture, just to take my visual perception of time, or my lack of perception of time, and make it concrete and visible. And we worked on it so it wasn't chaos, so it wasn't going to be a disaster and take me 2 hours to do it. And at the end of that hour, I said, wait a minute, Ellen. There's way more to my problem than drawing a picture, because at that point in time, I had read every time management planning organization book, you name it, that was out there. I'd tried every calendar, you know, oh gosh, I've had a nickel for every planner and calendar I bought in my life, I'd be rich. And, you know, I said, there's more to it than this. And so she gave me this advice, another bit of advice that I've never forgotten, and this, which is significant because of my working memory challenges. I don't remember much that people tell me. Quickly, I can forget it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And she said this to me. She stuck her finger out. She's kind of that person. She's a brilliant lady, but she's kind of boom, you know, kind of that, you know, stick your finger out. My husband jokes with me about how, oh, there she goes. She's whipping out her finger. Yeah. I do the same thing as Ellen, right? So she whips out her finger and she goes, go home. Take care of yourself in time and space and come back and see me. And I was like, go home, take care of myself in time and space and come back and see. What does that mean? So I must have said it over and over again as I walked to the car, time and space, time and space, time and space, time and space. Because again, like I just said, I forget things that people tell me pretty fast. And I thought I wasn't very smart. I've much later in life learned that my challenge is actually connected to working memory. It has nothing to do with being smart or not. My working memory capacity was never very good. I could never do double-digit math problems in my head, because by the time I left the ones place and went over to the next part of the process, I'd forgot what was in the ones place. Now, I could do it on paper, not a problem. But I could not do it in my head. I learned many, many years later when I presented at a brain injury conference, actually. I didn't know anything about brain injuries when I went to this conference. I was like, you want me to present at a brain injury conference? And so I went to the pre-conference to learn about brain injuries. And I was sitting there going, oh, that serious concussion on the playground when I was a little kid, that probably did a number on my growing little neurons for working memory, and my neuropsych friends agreed with me. So really, that working memory is really, that deficit is one of my personal major executive functioning deficits. I don't have ADHD, but I have executive functioning challenges. Everybody who has ADHD is going to have executive functioning challenges, but everybody who has executive functioning challenges does not necessarily have ADHD. And often head injuries are one of the differences for those situations.
And kids with learning disabilities can have struggle with executive function, but not have ADHD.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And often working memory, there's comorbidity between working memory challenges and learning challenges.
Learning.
Yeah, they go together. And so, what I was doing along the way, while I was working at that school, running that program, I also became I was a reading specialist, and I ended up with a private practice for almost 15, 20, 17, somewhere in there, years, 15 years of working with kids with math, writing, and written language issues at home. So I was a tutor when I started. And so Ellen sent me home with that, take care of yourself in time and space. And I was like, what does that mean? It's like, you go to see the guru and you get a Buddhist conundrum, a puzzle. And it took me a year to figure it out. And at the end of that year, my life was completely different. I was no longer yelling at the kids in the morning. My house was clean. The laundry was, the kids' clothes were in their drawers, not, the wet soccer shoes, soccer shorts in the washing machine when it's time for soccer, which was what happened before. And it just completely shifted. And then my son's fourth grade teacher called, and she said, he's being a complete flake. He's not turning anything in. And so I thought, okay, what can I do to help Josh? And he and I worked at that point in time on paper management, because he was one of those little kids who couldn't hold on to anything. I mean, it's like a piece of paper would disappear in 4 feet. I mean, he couldn't hold jackets, shoes, pencils, everything. It was like he was walking around a black hole. And after a couple of weeks, I asked him, Josh, is this helping any? And he paused. He was a very thoughtful little kid. Now he's a very thoughtful 37-year-old. But he paused and he said, yeah, it's not so stressful. I'm not getting into trouble for not turning in my work. So then all of a sudden I found myself helping my friends' kids because they were going off to middle school, and that's when the wheels started falling off. Originally, I thought that my market of people I was going to work with were talented and gifted kids. In sixth grade, going after sixth grade. they had enough support to come through, but then when things got too complicated for their brains and everything fell apart. And so that's what I started with. And then for 15 years, total strangers arrived on my doorstep looking for help with their kids, who particularly starting again in middle school, it expanded over time into a whole bunch of different age groups. And so what I did during those 15 years was I designed a program. A workbook. And it's a unique program to teach time management, planning, and organization. And it's actually from the perspective of the brain. Now, when I started this, I wasn't so much into the brain science that I am now, because there wasn't even that much brain science available on this topic. What I did with these people would show up, and I would use two skill sets that are unique to me, unlike most people who are out there. Number one, I have this time management challenge problem, a brain that doesn't just naturally do it for various reasons. And most critically, I am an educator. I am a reading specialist. And I understand how to teach things in a very carefully scaffolded program so that learning happens. So that's what sets me apart and what I do with my program called Seeing My Time. Unlike most coaching setups, I didn't come at it from a coaching perspective. I came at it from an educational perspective, and how do you get learning? And so that's kind of my story. I ended up people asked me to publish that program. And at the time, I thought, who would buy it? I just made this around my dining room table. And right around that time I decided to do it, I received a report from a local child neuropsychologist in Portland, Oregon. And in the she had referred someone to me. And in the recommendation section of her report, it said, we're so lucky to have Mary D. Sklar in our community. She's an expert at teaching executive functioning skills. And I read that line and I went, I am? What are executive functioning skills? I'd never seen it. This was somewhere, it was before I actually had gotten the workbook published. I was working on that concept. So it was somewhere, it was published in 2010. So it was probably around 2000, late 2008, 2009. And the phrase executive functioning was just beginning to show up in psychological testing reports for kids and IEPs and stuff. It was just beginning. And nobody knew what it was. I mean, it was like, what is this executive functioning
I
thing?
still think it's not exactly clear at the parent level.
Yes.
There's
Well,
not a, maybe with scientists too, it's not 100%.
It's not 100%. It's not 100% with educators. It's not 100% with the in the researcher department either, because they're all still debating just what constitutes executive functioning, and I don't know. I personally am not that interested in all the stuff. I'm this real pragmatic person. It's like, you're having trouble turning stuff in. You're not showing up on time. Here, let's try this. But what I do is different in that I don't, because I came to this conclusion over the years, I don't start with the strategies. I don't start with telling a kid or an adult, like I said, now, I've sold thousands of these workbooks now, I mean, around the world, and I train people around the world to teach this. It's taught in schools, it's taught in a lot of therapeutic one-on-one situations. Anyway, I don't start with the strategies, use this planner, use this clock, use this, which is where everybody instinctually wants to go, because people who do this well, they use these tools and they just say, you do this, But when you're dealing with someone whose brain doesn't naturally do time and is in the present, okay, that's what ADHD brains are typically like, is they tend to live only in the present. They're in the right now. They don't have a strong capacity for future. Future does not exist. And so that's the problem, is that they never pay attention to the future. They're all engaged in the present. So when you hand someone like that a tool, a kid, particularly a young person, they'll go, I tried that. I tried it one time. My teacher gave me one of those once and it didn't work, and so therefore I'm never doing it again. So in order to get buy-in for using the tools, which work, you have to get past the resistance point. Is I teach them a lot about their brain. We discover what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, and then we talk from the executive systems perspective, and then we talk about the tools and the strategies afterwards. Because why my program works is I teach people how to think
Get
about
the frontal lobe going.
and problem solve, but you have to build it. You have to, you don't just dump it all in their lap at one time. It's very much a step by step by step, little by little process. In fact, that's the first page two in the workbook says, little by little change happens, because parents and teachers want a magic wand. Fix this kid, give him a pill, fix this, get them done, turn this in. I don't want to worry about this. I got other stuff to worry about, So when I work with students, I don't work with kids by themselves. In fact, I will not work with students by themselves, because it's a brain development issue. Young brains can't transfer skills from one setting to the next setting, to another situation, because it's literally connected to their metacognitive processes of development, which doesn't come fully online until somewhere in their early 20s, mid early 20s.
Right.
So that's why how I work with people. I work with parents and the kids because the parents are critical to become the student, the child's coach, if you will, not the micromanager. That's, and I help the parents figure that out. It's not the same thing. It's not you telling them what to do. It's not you doing it for them. It's you stepping back, setting up the external environment so they have all the
Oh.
tools. Okay, the tools
Right.
have to be in place. And then you have to stand there and watch them fail.
Right.
And how and why, how I tell people is you're a coach, and the coach can't go on the field. Because what parents do is that we don't want them to, our kids to suffer. We don't want them to hurt. Because when they hurt, who else hurts? We do.
We don't, right?
We don't want to hurt. And we can see, we've been around long enough to see the cause and effect of their choices and what it's going to look like, and it's not pretty. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you want to jump in and stop that from happening. You know, parents either yell on the sideline. I had one parent, dad says, "Oh, I'm the coach on the sideline who yells at them. Like, why the heck didn't you do it?" And then another mom, she was great. She goes, "Oh, what I am, I put my arm around my little baby and I get in the middle of the field and I push everybody out of the way. So I'm getting them to the goalpost, you know." But neither one of those things, behaviors as a coach, create an effective adult. And that's what you're looking for.
Right.
And what we learn, unfortunately, is when we mess up. But see, the coach then on the sideline then comes up after the end of the game and says, didn't go well today, did it?" Well, you know what? Go home, take a shower, chill down, chill out. We can always have great days. Tomorrow, we're going to look at this again about what we can do differently next time. So that's the parent's role. It's like, okay, you give you the tools are there. We've talked about it, but they elected not to use them, right? That's
Right.
the choice. And then they crash. You didn't turn that paper on time. Oh, you know, you were up all night doing that. Oh, you know, so what can we do differently? You know, let's sit down and think about what are the tools? How could you have used a calendar? How could you know? But you don't tell them. You say, how could you do it? What would you do? Because it's really developing that metacognitive awareness is why Seeing My Time works so well. And I teach the parents how to do that so that they support their kids to become independent because that's the goal. I know right now everybody wants an executive functioning coach to just tell my kid what to do all the time and so it gets done. You know, or sit next to them so it gets done. And that's not developing independence in my book. You know, I'm done with people. I mean, I send them through my program and 99.9% of them I never see again until years later I get emails from them telling me how they're, you know, still using my tools and, you know, all
Yeah,
this
that's great.
stuff all the time. Does that give you kind of a
Yeah,
picture?
that was amazing, Mary D. So my question is, so if somebody's listening to this and they want to use your services, how should they go about doing that?
You want to go to my website, executivefunctioningsuccess.com. It's a terrible name, but that's how you find me. executivefunctioningsuccess.com.
It says it
And
all.
it says it all. And there you can learn all about our programs that we have. We have I work with people. I tend to work more with adults at this point just because of my age. I don't have the energy to work late in the evening with teenagers anymore. But I have some wonderful people that I've trained that work with me and
Okay.
that we work with. So we cover ages and we do things from distance all around, all over. We were doing Zoom before COVID. We were working with people. And we also do live sessions here in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah. And we have I have a book that you the parents might want to be as a good starting point. It's called 50 Tips to
Oh,
Help
yeah.
Students Succeed. Yeah, there you got it. Thank
Right
you.
there, if you can see it.
Yep. And so that was very carefully written with parents in mind because I realize how much work it is. And to read a whole book, so many of the books out there on executive functioning, you read them and you go, okay, now what? You know,
Yeah.
and I really wanted to be very practical. I'm a very practical oriented person. You know, what do I do now? And so there's
Yeah.
700 words or less, you've got an idea.
Yeah, no, I've read the book and I think it's very helpful. Lots of great tips and the graphics are very helpful too. I think just keeping it simple and starting gives a good starting point
Yes.
until you get to the next level where you're ready to like bring in intervention to support you and your family. Yeah.
It's
terrific.
Yeah, and you do want to support the whole family because it changes the dynamics. When you have a child who is struggling, it negatively impacts the whole family.
Yeah.
And so that's why I find working with a family so powerful and so gratifying, is that it shifts. Everybody has the same vocabulary. They're coming out with the same set of tools, and they start to understand the differences in each other's brains. Because when parents come to my program, they're my client just like the student is.
Yeah.
So it isn't like the adult sitting there staring at the kid, you know. It's everybody. It's perfect, to be perfectly honest, everybody, particularly since COVID, everybody needs this course. and now I work with adults. It's amazing. It's just amazing.
Yeah, great. All right, Mary D. Well, thank you for your time. This was a lot of wisdom, amazing advice, and motivation to take action, to do things to help either yourself or your child and your family. So thank you. I appreciate it.